Good morning. Today is Monday, May the 10th. Monday.
There you go. You don't stop. You're on a roll.
No. That's
you're just getting started.
I finally figured out the words.
There's a song there.
Yeah. I'm not sure which of us reference which of the singers, huh?
I'll let you take a shot at that one.
I have nothing in common with John Phillips, so let's just kind of stop at that point before we get into any
let's
of the other
options. Let's get into
options.
The riddles here. What have we got today?
Oh, now that's a long response.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do that. But it's a good question. Why do wagon wheels in movies sometimes seem to turn backwards? It's way too long. That's an imponderable. That's a whole different book. All right.
An imponderable.
Yes. Why do cobras not strike the snake charmer?
Well, that's interesting. I'm not a snake expert, but I would imagine maybe they have a relationship. They have an agreement. Don't strike me and I'll feed you.
Okay.
What's the answer?
It's not that the flute music that keeps the cobra from striking, because a cobra is stone deaf. The snake does have an auditory nerve, but it can't detect sound. It can only sense vibrations from the ground. The snake used by most snake charmers is not the aggressive king cobra, which is quick to strike at almost anything, but the Asiatic cobra, a much quieter snake and one less likely to strike at a large target, especially one too large for it to eat. Even so, the snake charmer takes no chances and so keeps his hands and the flute in constant motion so that the snake can never quite get into the position to strike.
There you go. Little hypnotics.
Yeah.
Fooling the snake. And picking a calm snake. That was a good move.
Yeah. The plastic snake is the one that I would prefer.
Not a hobby I plan on taking up anytime soon.
A little
soon.
Battery with a plastic snake. It just pops up and drops down, pops up and drops down.
I wonder how the first snake charmer fared. Yeah, how many times did it take him to figure this
probably
out?
Probably not well. It's kind of like, I think, with some of the food choices.
Exactly.
Right? You capture a prisoner.
That's right.
And make them eat it.
And watch.
And if they don't die... Okay, it's all right.
Somebody had to be the first one.
Though. That's right. I always wonder about the first guy that ate an egg.
You wonder about that one? He was hungry.
Yeah, what took him to that point of view?
Hunger.
Yeah. And what kind of egg was it? Because I don't
probably
think they
a
had a chicken farm.
No. That's a research question right there for somebody out there. That's
somebody
listening.
Else, yeah. I'm
pick
sure
that one up, everybody.
Yeah. We'll look to Lucy in Olduvai Gorge for that one.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. That's good.
So what are you hearing out of the craziness called Sacramento these days?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things in motion, but the dust is settling in various areas. The budget piece, you know, we're feeling pretty darn good about the relief packages that have come in for schools. So there's not a whole lot of consternation around that. But really the talk right now, a couple things. One is, what's the state's approach going to be to continuing allowing schools distance learning or not having that option available into the fall? Are they going to...
Post-virus?
Yeah, exactly. You know, as things are still kind of settling out, will that be something that schools have as an option, or will they just need to use their traditional independent study type of formats? A lot of discussion around that. You know, there's a lot of concerns about the impact of students on distance learning for long periods of time, and we're excited to start seeing that transition where everybody's back in schools. So that's a big topic, right? Everybody's got an opinion.
I would expect also that certain parents don't want their kids at the school.
There's a large
period, and that's it, and absolutely. That's it. It's not homeschool.
And so needing to give them an option.
Yeah.
Right? So we're pretty confident there'll be a lot of families that are like, you know what? This is actually working really well for us. We want this as our option moving forward. So
can you do a dual?
Well, that's what would typically be called independent study. Yes. You know, you can do a part-in-part program. It's tough to put together. But independent study in the past was used really sparingly. You know, it wasn't seen as a mainstream way to get your education. It was
you had to earn that.
A life event happening or something significant where you just coming to school just really wasn't in your options. Whereas now it's look what we've done for an entire year, right?
Can you just drop a couple cameras inside of each classroom
and
say, guys, you are now responsible on your own. We're not going to have a separate curriculum. We're not going to have separate teachers, and you're going to have to send us your reports, your studies, your paper mosaics, whatever the projects might happen to be. You're responsible to get them to us.
Some form of independent study, they've been doing that for years, to be quite honest, just like we know in college, right? You can take online classes. That's not a brand new thing. So those options have been around and will probably find their way into, you know, kind of a standard offering in schools. But you have to also have students that can be, you know, pretty well self-directed and self-supported and, you know, manage their time well. It's not for everybody. To provide support. So if you're going to offer it, you got to be at least mindful enough to go, how do we support these students so that they're able to stay on track and don't fall behind?
So if you pull that student profile out of the classroom, I would suspect that those tend to be more the achievers than the challenges in a classroom. I would think that really now resets the classroom experience to be something that perhaps is not anticipated.
Yet to be seen a little bit there. The biggest question right now is that they're pondering is, what are those options going to be? What are they going to allow schools to actually be able to offer and still receive their revenue for the students participating in their programs, right? And so how you design it is, there's so many different ways you can go about it, and how you can implement that curriculum. It's very, very broad across the spectrum, depending upon, like, if you're trying to get a lab class for science to get into your college, you know, you're having a lab course like biology or chemistry on independent study isn't going to cut it. You got to get in there and do the hands-on work, right? So there's a complexity on that end. As far as, like, the level of students and their success in school, do more successful students do better on independent study or not? I think that would probably be a logical thing to assume, but a lot of our students who are in independent study really have a different situation in their life where maybe they have to work, or maybe they're helping, like nowadays, taking care of their siblings.
Or that's, you know, the traditional one.
We're seeing more of that right now too, as parents are coming back to work and all schools aren't completely open. Kids are doing things like that to help out around the house.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley, Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools. Chris, you said that the state, you had a couple of things. One was this in-classroom versus not in-classroom, that dynamic. And certainly the infrastructure is there, whether or not the willingness or the perhaps the functionality or the desire.
To make that big of a transition, right?
Yeah, or to do it for 2 years or three years or 4 years. Yeah. You know, I'm sure we'll know in 20 years if that was a wise move or not, but immediately, yeah. But you said there was something else out there, too.
Oh, as far as, like, what they're working on? There's a couple other bills that are happening. One actually is around the concept of retention. So this isn't new. Students in the same grade level, so you might have called
staff.
It holding back.
Students.
I got held back a year, you know, all the different ways of saying that, but the idea that...
Flunked is the way we used to say it, right?
That would be more like in high school, you didn't make it, you didn't graduate.
Twinkle in your eye and smile on your face, so you remember that.
You get it, right? So all of those things about, you know what, we've got a child here who maybe shouldn't go on to the next grade level. And that's a significant decision to make for a family, for any child or youth that's in school. You know, and you don't do that in high school. So once you get to high school, you earn credits to move up the grades. And just because you didn't pass
the class, not the grade.
Class, yeah. Right? Doesn't mean you're not a sophomore. You're going to move right up, but you got to earn the credits necessary to graduate. That's where somebody didn't make it through high school. You know.
Well, the accountability though of having one, I can remember most of them were medical related. You know, if somebody had a major issue 100%. And wasn't available for 5 or 6 months of the year. Yep.
Some sort of family trauma.
They're not going to be able to master whatever the knowledge base is that they should to advance.
Or sometimes social, emotional, you know, or just maturity reasons.
But to push those kids out along
doesn't,
I mean, you're not doing them any good.
Not necessarily. So, but the conversation now is with, you know, this word's gotten pretty loose.
Let me guess.
Yeah, what do you got?
Shaming.
No. Oh. Wrong. Man. Okay. Where's that book? No, learning loss. So learning loss is the go-to word for what's happening, you know, for students throughout this pandemic, right? So what's the amount of loss of learning that's happened? And there's a couple legislators that were like, wow, we really need to up the game on allowing retention to be more of a norm than not. And so it's something I'm opposed to. I think, you know, families and schools really need to be working together. We all went through this situation this last year together. It's not like, you know, one child over another needs to be held back. Because
this is as a group.
Yes, right. Right. We have you know, some work to do in front of all of us. There's always going to be cases, obviously, where some students need more attention and more assistance than others, no question about it. But it's a little bit scary to consider the fact that, well, retention could be more of, you know, a more applied way of helping students catch up.
So that would be at the
pandemic.
Elementary school level?
More K-6. Yep, K-6 situation.
Yeah, couldn't a lot of that, I don't know, you know, outside looking in, right? Summer school?
Absolutely.
Just do a full-on summer school, and it's, okay, what you missed, we're going to catch up, and it might be a little quicker paced. But over the 12 months of July through mid-June, we'll be able to pick up the pace, and we'll catch everybody up.
100%. It's certainly, you know, going to the point of where we're going to retain and we're going to repeat a grade, that's an extreme measure to take. There's a lot of things that you can do on the lower end, right, to try to help make that up. Summer school is one of those. After school assistance, some tutoring, just working closely with your school site about what are the specific concerns that you have, and then putting a game plan together and moving forward on that. Retention should be the very last, if at all, a step to take, you know, particularly during these times. And so there's the point is there's a couple of legislators that are pushing some of that potential retention policy. I don't think it's going to gain any ground. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But it's been interesting to see, you know, how that has become a fairly legitimate idea for some legislators.
So are you recommending to the various school districts that you work with to do a full-on summer school, not pottery class and typing, but a full-on, okay, guys, we're going to be on, and we may take a break, you know, a week off, or you know, we recommend a week or 2 weeks off, but this is catch-up. This is a time to kind of get everything rolling again.
We'd like to see districts do as much of that as they possibly can. You know, nobody's requiring summer school of their students that I'm aware of. I'm pretty sure no districts in this county are going to require summer school.
But
it's pretty
not?
Hard to
but
do
why
that.
Not?
Well, because, you know,
unless the funding isn't there, then that's
a different dynamic.
There's
certainly funding available to try to offer as much of a summer school program as you can, but you can't necessarily require students to attend summer school. The only way that has really happened would be if you're in high school and you need to repeat a class in order to graduate, but you still can't force a student into the summer school program.
Versus retention?
Well, retention
would be
apparent.
I would think that'd be a pretty good motivator for a lot of folks.
If you got down to that level, I mean, that would be part of that family planning, working with your school site, working with your school administration and teachers to discover what is the right plan for us, and maybe in that case, it's summer school.
I would think a flexible model could be something like, okay, we're going to be here for 8 weeks.
For sure.
We want you here 7 weeks. So if you've got a family vacation scheduled or something
work
like
around
that,
it.
No problem. We got 7 weeks of material that we're going to play out into 8. So wherever you take that week off, you're not going to be behind. You still will experience summer. But we also, recognize we're behind the eight ball here a little bit.
Yeah, and I think districts will be working towards those types of options for families to make them available throughout the county. Absolutely.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley from the Humboldt County Office of Education. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Randall Sand and Gravel, and who did I forget?
I don't know, but that's pretty impressive. You got them
all. Humboldt Bay Bistro.
Bam. Nice job.
All right. A couple days off, you have to retrain the dog. Woof. Typically this time of the year we're talking about all kinds of other things. Graduation season.
Yeah.
And that being known, we would be talking about finals and that would be known. We would be talking about summertime maintenance and that would be known. I guess this is just kind of the end of a screwy year. Is that kind of...
It's screwy year, correct. Yes, it's been a challenge for sure, you know. But we're all the traditional things are still rolling. So we are in the midst of award season, as I like to say.
You're going to let parents at your graduation ceremony?
Well, yeah, we're working on a site right now. It'll be an outside location, you know.
It'll be like Redwood Bowl? Gee, what a shocker, huh?
Well, first of all, my program, I might have about 30 kiddos there.
Back off.
We'll be doing something, you know, we'll put them together. And we have there's criteria to follow for graduation ceremonies that will allow for more of a traditional celebration. Certainly not like the norm, but with the appropriate social distancing and the way
so
people egress
now,
and egress and
is
all
it
those things.
6 inches on the airplane? Is it 3 feet in the classroom? Is it 6 feet in businesses? Or is it because you're outside if you've had the vaccine stuff? Okay, fine.
You asked a lot of questions there.
No, I just
yeah, but it's changing.
It's A, B, C, or D. Yeah.
The protocols definitely have been, you know, in flux, you know, quite a bit. But they're loosening up, you know, and we're able to do more things, which is exciting. So, yeah, we are looking at the 3 feet right now is the social distance. From what we understand, that might even be decreased, you know, going into the fall, which would be really, really important for schools to be able to
fill the traditional classroom setting.
Yeah. And then following the other safety protocols, the masks and all the different things that we're super accustomed to now, you know, will be in play. But as far as like, is this year ending much different? I mean, it's ending in the fact that we're starting to recover a bit more. We have all schools in the county are doing some level of in-person instruction. That's a good sign. And at HCOE right now, we're continuing on with our award programs. Congratulations to all of the teachers, classified staff. This is the month where we celebrate Day of the Teacher and Day of the Classified Staff or bus driver, custodian, paraprofessional, the whole nine yards. We just on the 12th, 2 days, we'll have the Excellence in Teaching Awards ceremony that folks can attend on our webpage. We've done the recordings for that and Gene Olson Career Achievement
Award. You can't
too.
Use the word attendance.
Well, yeah,
I watch
sure you
a computer.
Can. Well, sort
of. Or a cell phone.
It's pretty cool what they've been able to do.
Well, I understand the mastering of the technology is kind of
but
fun.
But it's not the same as being in person.
It's a kumbaya. It's everybody sure. there. Yeah.
And in fact, I did a little welcome and I filmed it in the Sequoia conference room alone. And I said, look, I'm sure miss you guys, you know, basically pointing to an empty room.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't wait till we're all in here because you're right. That feeling of, you know, the camaraderie and all of that.
Yeah.
But we're still pushing forward and being as creative as we can. we'll have the silver.
However, you did get your choice of lunches, and they were served on a proper time, right? Since you were the only one in the whole building.
Well, since I brought my own lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm generally done by 10. It's like brunch.
Yeah.
Then I go buy a lunch.
Right.
Don't tell my wife that.
Oh, no, I would never do that, no.
But so in the Stellar Student Achievement Awards, those went off without a hitch this year as well. Since I have the mic here, give Stellar Student Award winners Claire Barris from Eureka High School and Alyssa Petticino from Arcata High School big congratulations for being selected by the committee to be the top two Stellar students that were selected. Those are our senior high school students representing all the different high schools. So all those things are continuing along, and you know, the feedback that we get is, you know, just a lot of gratitude and appreciation for, you know, maintaining, you know, those important ceremonies to honor the good work of everybody that's been putting it forward this year.
College, yeah. Hopefully, all of the letters have gone out and all that kind of thing. What was that like for a lot of the kids? I know you you're not working specifically directly with a lot of them, but selecting a college, you know, campus visits. I mean, all the normal traditional things obviously weren't normal and were untraditional this year.
I think it's been a challenge. I think the universities, it's really been on them. I mean, this is their customer base, right? They need these bodies to stay open. So what I have noticed is those universities that are, you know, really willing to accommodate and reach out and find ways to still connect kids to their school and recruit them that this is the place that you want to come and spend the next four years of your life. Some colleges did really good at that, and others probably struggled with that a little bit. But it certainly hasn't been the traditional experience. Although I am aware of a lot of colleges that have been hosting, you know, those parent events where they come onto the campus and they'll get a tour with the appropriate safety protocols and all of that. So they found a way to continue to maintain some of that experience, but certainly not the big rah-rah stuff that they've been able to put on in the past.
Still getting used to spring football. KIDS, News and Information Time, it's 8:40.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We are back talking shop this morning with head honcho at Franklin Elementary School, Chris Hartley. I say,
it's been a while since those days, right?
Yeah. Certainly things have changed a little bit, but a lot of the basics, yeah, I think, are still there. What parents want for their kids, what kids want for 100%. Themselves, what the community expectations are. I think a lot of that stuff is still in play to the same extent that it was 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Yeah.
The relationship side of it. And
the challenges are certainly a whole lot different as you're more of a marionette at the end of the Department of Education strings. When you're looking at some of these different challenges that are out there, how many are self-induced? The state of California educational system, rather than cultural pressures or internal pressures that your staff might have, or your school boards might have. I mean, I think that is a little different.
The bureaucracy of it all is challenging, no question about it. You know, so you talk about it at the California Department of Education level, or state decision makers who have an idea, and that this idea is going to be the thing that's going to help all of us, and they don't really understand who we are, what we really need. Yeah, those things are super frustrating, but that's why we need to be our best advocates. As these decisions are being made, and as, you know, folks at Sacramento are considering policy changes or this, that, or the other, that's our job to make sure they hear our voices and that we represent, you know, what actually will work for us. And I feel very fortunate we've got good partnerships with our local legislators to be able to be our voice for that. And they get education, and we have frequent conversations with them. You know, I go back to the fall, and, you know, we were able to work with Senator McGuire in getting some funding for technology access here because our access to broadband and all those things is so much more limited than an urban area. And we still have a long ways to go. But if we're not letting people in Sacramento know, then that's on us, Brian. You know, and so we can't just complain about the bureaucracy. We got to be a player in it. Doesn't mean we always get our way. But I am super proud of leaders in Humboldt County throughout this process where we've been able to have decisions made that have worked out for us. And that's at the state, region, and locally here with public health as well.
At the with the fiber optic line that's coming on shore, I don't know, date specific.
Yeah, right.
Are the school districts right now that aren't served and those that need this concept called redundancy? Are you guys banging away to have the local communities also be able to participate and benefit from this thing being here, aside from the employment side of it? Because my understanding is that there are some that are saying you need to put spurs in for us, or I'm using choo-choo train language here, but you know, me and Thomas go way back.
Some way to connect into
versus just a direct pipeline over into the valley, and it goes out, and you know we see the trench, and there's no direct benefit. I'm thinking of the real rural guys and gals.
Yeah, of course. You know, any opportunity to access and punch into that would be, you know, if we didn't do that, what an opportunity lost that would be. What's interesting though is I'm vaguely aware of all of these details, like you, like the technical side of it all. But there are access points right now, or there are areas where broadband's going through some of our small communities that we haven't been able to punch into due to various other reasons, like who owns it and are they willing to share that or allow an access point? And then the issue is, well, should they even have the choice to not allow that access point there? You know, so we have those issues right now currently, to be quite honest, that we've been pounding away on and look forward to making some progress.
So this may alleviate the need to continue beating.
It would be great, yeah, to have another option to say, okay, fine, now we got this option, so we're good. You know, but it's an ongoing issue for us. It's not going to resolve itself immediately, you know, and we absolutely have to keep the issue on the radar. You know, you look at like Southern Humboldt School District out there, you know, those communities, they really the access to satellite or, you know, that type of a situation. So we continue to have to provide the technology access for those kids. It's like it should be seen as a utility, to be quite honest with you. It shouldn't be shouldn't be an option.
Kind of like streets?
Yeah. Or that.
Yeah.
Street lights.
Something along those lines. A lot of the kids now have got computers.
Yes.
May have or may not have had in the past or
no question.
Education provided. How much of your budget now are you going to have to start allocating for maintenance either of software or of item replacement in, 3 years? I guess is supposed to be the average life?
If you were lucky, yeah. So with a traditional Chromebook, you know, you're probably looking at 2 years. And so that will become an operational part of the school district's budgeting as they're moving forward, as they, you know, this situation was an emergency, right? It's like, we need these devices.
Yeah, it wasn't planned. And
right.
Yeah,
we need them right now. Let's get them. And we were able to do that for the most part. And I think this is a part of that conversation we had earlier in the show. What kind of instructional models are they going to be delivering? And as you make those decisions, then you have to plan for what are the supplies and equipment and infrastructure.
Yeah, if you give a computer, a laptop to Winston, and you don't give one to me, yeah, it doesn't matter if I'm in the classroom or if I'm out in the field doing studies or I'm in the lab or you're going to have some of those tensions also.
That would be an interesting thing to see you and Winston fighting over a laptop.
Oh, I think one of us would capitulate really quickly.
Winston's going to win.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for coming by, bud.
That's great. Great to be here. Take care.
See you everybody tomorrow.